Okay, welcome everyone. My name is Louise Gardner. I'm a sustainable finance specialist with the IFC, part of the World Bank Group. And we work in the sustainability and disclosure space, particularly helping our clients, so clients in the financial sector and the real sector, to adopt these practices, primarily because IFC, as a development finance institution, requires that our clients adhere to environmental, social, and governance standards in order to receive financing, but also because we see that that's a very positive thing in the market and helps them do better. And then in recent years, we've become more very involved in the issuance of sustainability instruments. And for those instruments, we see a growing need for disclosure on the environmental and social impacts of companies and financial institutions. So that's why I'm here. And our topic today is harmonizing reporting frameworks to mitigate the risk of fragmentation. And I think this is one of the things that's preoccupying a lot of people right now, because the reporting world has just exploded. And we started out 10 or 20 years ago with the Global Reporting Initiative driving the uptake of environmental and social and governance reporting by the private sector. But in the last 10 years, there's been an absolute explosion in interest in different types of reporting frameworks emerging, so covering key topics like climate change through the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures. We now have the Task Force on Nature-Related Financial Disclosures, which is pushing interest in biodiversity and ecosystems-related reporting. And we've got initiatives like the European Union with their sustainable finance disclosure regulation for the financial sector, as well as corporate sustainability disclosure regulation for companies of certain sizes. And they've added a requirement for due diligence in the supply chains of these companies to report on environmental impacts and human rights. And then, as many of you know, we have the International Sustainability Standards Board, which has made an effort to harmonize basic foundational principles of reporting on sustainability, as well as a special focus on climate. And they have adopted the approach that there needs to be a definition of materiality focused on the impact on the business and the impact on the bottom line and the kinds of information investors should want. But in the EU, we see a strong focus on double materiality, which is both the impact on the businesses as well as the environmental and social impact that those businesses and financial institutions will have. So all to say, it's a big storm of different interests, different priorities, and we're starting to see some convergence. And that convergence is very welcomed, and it really helps the reporters. But we need to figure out what is at stake in the convergence, what are the opportunities, and what are the other things coming up on the horizon? What are the other pressures, whether from regulators or investors, for reporting that might not currently be covered by ISSB? So we have three panelists today. So we had one of our panelists, unfortunately, sick. So Tendai Matika, who head of Africa PRI, Principles for Responsible Investment. She can't join us today. But I'm very pleased to welcome Lashni Naidu, Chief Sustainability Officer at the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. And they've really led the way on defining disclosure in the South African context. We have Ben April, who is the ESG lead, Africa Financial Services at KPMG One Africa. And then we have Vukile Davidson, Chief Director, Financial Markets and Stability at the National Treasury. So I'm going to ask each of you to start out with some introductory remarks and to just talk a little bit about what does the reporting storm look like from your vantage point? So what is your perspective on either the fragmentation or the convergence? You could also touch on one or two of the most important future developments, but then what do you see as the key opportunities or risks that we need to navigate? And I'm going to ask Lashni to go first, given the JSC's work, and I'm going to put you in the hot seat. Lashni, over to you.
Thank you so much, Louise, and good afternoon, morning, everyone. Apologies. This is a very difficult question to actually answer, and this is coming off the back of a week and a half of a lot of internal and external conversations around What is the future of sustainability reporting? Mandatory, voluntary? Where are we going? What is the approach as a country? So our position has always been, and it continues to be, that we work with the other regulators, key stakeholders in this ecosystem to chart, navigate a way forward that makes sense for South Africa as a country. Now, and it's not an easy answer, actually, just seeing the conversations that we've had. So many of you may know that, you know, we were starting to look at updating the disclosure guidance, which came out in 2022. And when we drafted that disclosure guidance, it was based on one of the frameworks was looked at was the IWSB, but at that point it was exposure drops. So at this point we said, let's update it, looking at IWSB's final standards. Now, we haven't released it. We've done a whole lot of work, but we haven't, because we've gone back and we've started having internal conversations based on, you know, what is happening globally. Because like you said, Louise, the space is moving quite rapidly, both locally and globally. So it's trying to balance the advantages, disadvantages, the pros and cons, because there's quite a few role players in this ecosystem that we have to consider. And maybe just from a risk perspective to highlight, it's not just companies who have to put these reports out. And let me disclaim this. We are, and I think as a reporter ourselves, as the JSC, because we put out these reports, we welcome consolidation, because if it's one less standard, one less report, hey, yay, you know, we're all going to celebrate that. So it's not to say reporting standards, the convergence is a bad thing in any way, shape, form, or means. It's, but how do we go about this that it makes sense? So from a risk perspective, you know, it's not just companies in terms of setting up the processes, systems, and the costs, etc., that go into setting up these reports, but it's that entire value chain that's impacted. And how do you manage the risks to them? An example of that is your supply base. I mean, pretty much most of these standards are requiring companies to actually understand their suppliers and report or engage and work with suppliers. So you're bringing them along this journey. This is more than what I think companies probably envisaged in terms of, how do I expend my resources now? I've got to bring somebody else along. I mean, I've got enough trying to convince people within a business where how important sustainability is. I've got to do the capacity building there. But now it's looking at these other businesses as well. Another potential risk that we, and these are opportunities. I must emphasize that every risk, there is a flip side and there are opportunities here. And just to be short, so I can hand over quickly, the other one is around assurance, because an assurance not just for companies again, but regulators, because somebody's got to monitor compliance to, if we decide a specific standard, somebody's got to monitor that. So it's the regulators and those compliance functions having the capacity and the skills to be able to be effective. But again, companies themselves, because this is a new function, this is a new language, it's asking them to be able to have intelligent conversations with their auditors, getting their internal audit teams up to speed. So there's a lot to consider. We don't throw the baby out with bathwater and say, no, we're not mandating, we're keeping everything voluntary, or we're doing a hybrid. Whatever the decision is, it has to make sense. And just considering all of these factors when we do that.
Thanks, Lashni. Ben, maybe if I can go next to you. I think, yes, your vantage point, what are you seeing as what's coming down the line? And then what do you think are the key things we need to navigate to make this all work?
Yeah, to what Lashni say, we do see that there's, I think, because this is quite an evolving subject that's being developed on a continuous basis. We're seeing a lot of frameworks coming down the line, but we're also seeing that there's a lot of embedment in terms of trying to embed particularly the ones that we already have and making the existing frameworks work. I think one aspect that just recently came through is that where we have this plethora across these different frameworks in terms of different taxonomies. And I think one of the aspects that will help from a disclosure perspective is where the FSCA with National Treasury is piloting that we use actually the South African taxonomy, particularly for local reporting purposes, because to align our reporting not only with our local requirements, but what is in the interest of from a South African perspective. But also we are also participating particularly on the nature aspect, where we see a lot of developments happening there. It's not only going to from a commercial aspect, we also see that there's a lot of governmental aspects that's also coming into, where you have nature aspects, climate aspects, particularly applicable to cities. And I think given the climate change bill that has just been signed and that people have alluded to this morning, is that there's going to be a big impact from an infrastructure perspective and how that's going to impact our local municipalities, because the South African economy, how it's structured, it's sometimes a bit different from different economies and how we adopt these. And I think that's where the government will have to play a particular role in terms of prioritizing some of these things that is required from a national level, and in what sector we can play in terms of contributing to those. The similar to what they have with the carbon budget that came out earlier in the year, in terms of what is the carbon budget that's been allowed for the different sectors that we've commented onto. Because otherwise we all try to, these frameworks are set at a global level, but it needs to have a local nuance, and not only from a South Africa perspective, but also from an Africa perspective. Because when we engaged with a lot of the regulators, they said that the frameworks are nice, but it doesn't speak to us from what our local requirements are. And the big aspect that we always have to keep in consideration, a lot of these frameworks, currently it's based nature, climate and nature, and the social aspects that's, like you spoke about, from a social development goals and from a UN 2030 perspective, we haven't even touched on those. Those are still in development. But I think within this space is that we just have to be, this is evolving, more is coming down the line. But at the same time, we need these because we need to attract foreign direct investments. That is the reality. And if you don't report on something, you can't manage it. And you can't disclose your progress that you're making towards our country or our company contribution to the global common good. Thanks.
Maybe just to add on to what you're saying, I think what I'm seeing is we've got this common baseline through the ISSB, where there's now an agreement internationally on what the core of sustainability reporting and climate reporting should look like. There's a definition of materiality as it impacts the main readers or investors. And then a process for thinking around what are the material topics for you and how do you govern that? How do you manage that? So it's a core. Yeah. But then what you're talking about is that there are all these other pieces in the market that are looking to connect with disclosure and expecting disclosure to fulfill their purposes. Maybe on that note, I can go to Vukile. So Vukile, from the point of view of a policymaker trying to create a landscape within South Africa, but also align internationally, what are those dynamics from your vantage point and what do you need?
No, thanks, Louise. And I guess, you know, the two previous speakers, I think, made really clear just how complex and interrelated the disclosure topic is. From our perspectives, as policymakers, we see the entire climate finance policy framework essentially being underpinned by two key pillars. One is disclosure, and the other is a carbon price. And everything that we do from a policy perspective to transition the economy from its current high carbon intensity to a low carbon equilibrium in 2050 will be built on these two policy pillars. So disclosure is, in our view, a critical, indispensable part of the regulatory landscape. I mean, linked to that, very closely linked to that in disclosure is how we think about transition. And part of disclosure frameworks needs to include or have embedded within it a transition disclosure. So that is about how not only what companies are doing today, but how companies move from their current position to a net zero state in the future. So maybe just to highlight on where we are right now, we have, as many of you may know, recently published guidance by the Prudential Authority, particularly in relation to banks and insurers, about how they should approach disclosure. And this really represents the first kind of step on our disclosure journey. Within that, of course, they also mentioned the importance of transition planning, and that's in line with the ISSB S2's approach. So even within that, I think you can see that the direction that we're traveling in is to have, as much as possible, a coherent, globally consistent, comparable disclosure framework, which includes decision-relevant information, not a sort of unmanageable laundry list of you know, climate activities, but just the stuff that we think is really, really needed for to make decision-relevant decisions for investors. Which I guess brings me to the point about the critical importance of convergence and interoperability. Whether it's the taxonomy, the carbon price and the carbon tax, or disclosure frameworks, interoperability and consistent approach with other jurisdictions for us is an indispensable approach. Of course, we need to ensure that we reflect what's happening domestically in our own economy. But to enable the inflows of the capital that we need to transition or rely on more than just national resources, it require global resources and capital inflows. And to have that, you need to have a comparable, consistent disclosure framework. So we see this as something that is, you know, unavoidable, really, for a coherent and effective system. There's a lot of work happening internationally. Louise touched on what's happening in the EU. We also have a lot of work happening in the US and at the FSB level, where there are a lot of economies driving towards a common approach towards disclosure. There's a lot of work happening being done to consolidate this and be able to basically determine what would represent a minimum standards that most jurisdictions can start to imply and embed in within national regulatory frameworks that would achieve this consistency. There's a lot of risk though, and we're in a difficult geopolitical space. Maybe before I go on to this point, I should have done at the beginning, just as a disclaimer that these are my views and not necessarily the views of the department or the minister. But there's a massive challenge that economies like ourselves have, small open economies. What's happening in the EU and the US is a very difficult geopolitical space to navigate. It's plausible, maybe a little bit less plausible after the weekend, but that we could have a very different economic approach in the US, and that would cascade down to almost every jurisdiction. Likewise, in the EU, there's a high risk, I think, of dramatic changes in government, which may have different priorities that would impact the development of policy domestically. So we're in a high uncertainty environment, and it makes the policy certainty that the economic actors are so desperate to have really difficult to provide, because the space is so contested. Maybe just to end off, just a word about how we are thinking about it domestically and the direction of travel here. Likewise, there's a really fragmented approach to disclosure and the various departments and agencies responsible for disclosure domestically. We have part of it that resides within the company's framework under the Department of Trade and Industry, and then we have what is much more under the control of the Minister of Finance, being the financial sector regulatory authorities. And there's almost two different ways in which this could go. Our view, certainly in the Treasury, is that we need to move to align and keep up with international actors, and that may require policy development within the sort of finance family before we can necessarily ensure that the other agencies and departments that have an interest are completely aligned. So we, in other words, we shouldn't necessarily wait until we have the perfect ecosystem, that there are steps that we should take now towards effective disclosure frameworks, including what we believe is as being the necessary end goal, mandatory disclosure. These are not just my words. The DG made this clear when he closed the National Treasury's Climate Symposium last week, that is our goal, and that is the direction that we're moving towards. Lastly, as we do this, there's an opportunity to consolidate the other pieces of ESG. We don't call it ESG, we call it transformation and codes, but we have a really developed pseudo ESG model anyway for the social part. I think this represents a really good opportunity to be able to package that in a coherent ESG framework, and we hope we can work with colleagues in the DTI to achieve that. Final point, everything that we do, Louise, needs to be underlined by reasonable proportionality. We need to be mindful that SMEs and neighboring countries whose financial systems ostensibly are our own, through the presence of our banks and financial institutions there, are not burdened by a overly cumbersome disclosure framework that those jurisdictions would struggle to meet, and it would ultimately be counterproductive. Let me stop there.
Great, thank you. So that covered a lot of touch points. Do we have a question?
I think this is done. Yeah, done. It's I'm just to understand in the whole ecosystem and landscape of the who drives the consolidation, the harmonization, you know, that we're discussing. Who's the body that drives that within in the country? And how does that initiative flow?
You know, because at the moment it feels like, you know, it's up to everybody to decide. Well, be from a corporate, so you know, if the corporates can decide where they want to focus, and of course there's the JSE requirements and so on, but still it feels like there's still a lot of choice and autonomy in the system, rather than somebody or, and I mean a body of people or a specific group of people having the mandate to drive harmonization for us as a country.
We had one more question. Should we take one more question and then go back to the panel?
Yes, thank you. I do a lot of consulting and advisory in this space. And one of the key, and this is a global issue, it's not just a South African issue, is really picking up on the S components. I mean, we do have under GRI and all these other guidelines, social aspects, and we have the codes as well. But when we're looking at specific standalone reporting, when we look at developmental impact or kind of reporting, there's absolutely no guidance whatsoever. So, is there any, I mean, and I think there's a room for South Africa or Africa specifically to drive this agenda. And we see a lot of Europe and the US focusing on the E, you know, because that has a large implication for them. And ostensibly, the S issues have been dealt with. But really, that's the main focus we should be having in South Africa. You know, socioeconomic upliftment, job creation, all of these things, alignment to the SDGs, and we're looking at alignment to the National Development Plan for South Africa. But there's no guidance. Is there any move or shift or inclination to actually formalize that so that we can actually have a framework around how we address these issues? I think it would help with advising and providing a roadmap, because there's also a lot of funding that can be deployed into the space, specifically from the DFIs and development and your impact funders, who are looking for track record, how you're actually measuring yourself, can they actually rely on this information? So there's another avenue of revenue that could be coming into the country if we could formalize this type of reporting.
Nice questions. Thank you. Do we have any responses from the panel?
The short answer to your question is it is fragmented and it is suboptimal. And I think that that's a function of it, of this reporting landscape being, I guess, relatively new. And in the first instance, being driven by the demand from the sector and policy struggling to catch up. And policy is behind, and that's just the reality. It's reality in South Africa, and it's a reality in many jurisdictions. I think you'll see a much more coherent system developing as we move from voluntary to mandatory. Because in the voluntary space, there are no limitations in essence, and there is no legal underpinning. And that's why we think it's really important that we move as fast as possible to get to the mandatory stage. I think that will set the benchmark. It will make clear the requirements for market participants, and then drive a much more common and consistent approach domestically. So that's, I'm afraid that's the only answer I have for you, is that I think it's a function of a lack of a legislative underpinning, which we're moving really fast to try and achieve.
Yeah, maybe just as the other panelists answer, just if you could also maybe name some of the agencies that are the most involved.
So maybe to just help clarify who's the various parties, because I mean, I was talking about regulators. So you've got DTI under that SIPC that links to Companies Act. And within Companies Act, we've got, you know, the Social and Ethics Committee as a possible avenue. I'm not saying that's the direction, but from a SIPC DTI perspective, that's all companies. So that's their frame within which they would have that control. Then you have the FSCA, you have the Prudential Authority, and I'm not sure if you've seen with the FSCA, they've put out that, is it a risk report earlier in March, which talks to mandatory reporting, mandatory sustainability reporting, their roadmap and their thinking. And it talked about a couple of other things around sustainable finance as well. And the other, I mean, Treasury and Prudential Authority, and as well as, you know, the guidance notes that Paquita has mentioned. And then where we come in is from a listings requirement. But our ambit of control is those companies that are actually listed. And as working with FSCA through our regulator, is, you know, the decisions and the conversations about how do you actually move this forward, and the extent of what we would or wouldn't introduce as part of the listing requirements. But there's so many, like you said, there's so many moving parts. And believe me, there's a lot of conversations happening with all of these agencies and bodies, including, for example, the other departments like forestry, fisheries, environment, especially from a climate perspective. So everyone is trying to figure out, how do you pull all of this together? I think the other body to mention is the Financial Reporting Council, Standards Council. And they're, I think they, what's the word I'm making for? They were only looking at financial reporting standards. Sustainability reporting standards was not part of their mandate. And I think that's a conversation that's also taking place as well. So there's different moving parts. It's not to say that no work has been done. A lot of conversations, a lot of engagement, as just how do we move quickly to an end goal. And I think the challenge is, there's a few challenges that everybody is working through. But everybody understands the urgency, that if we don't move fast enough, we will get left behind. And that has a severe impact in terms of accessing the finance that we need. Like I said, we're not going to get it from here.
I guess it depends who you ask. If there was someone from the DTI sitting here, I guess that they may say that it is SIPC and the Financial Standards Reporting Council. but there isn't. There's someone from the Treasury sitting here. And our view is that standards should be applied through the financial sector and then should be cascaded down to the real economy. And that's a more coherent, effective way to approach consistent reporting. It's contested. And, you know, there is a middle and a coherent approach to be able to knit these two together. I think what you're going to see is that the first mover will be financial sector regulatory authorities. So you're going to have the downward pressure from financial institutions. And I think that within time, you'll have a catching up and a alignment with the financial sector reporting and companies regulator aligning to what we have done in the financial sector. I hope that answers your question.
Ben, do you want to add on that?
No, not on that. I wanted to address the question on the social aspect.
Okay.
To the point that she made. And it's true because we see that I was in a couple of forums with the guys from Asia and all of them. They're also having the same complaints that all of them are saying is that their requirements is more from a social perspective. And that is currently what's happening. And you'll even find out and the context, and if you speak to the colleagues from Indonesia, they've even changed the taxonomy. Some stuff that we don't regard as green, they regard it as green, like coal-fired power stations being included in the taxonomy. But overall, the development globally, has been driven from a European perspective. They led in terms of that. That's where TCFD, everything followed from that. So climate, nature, and social, they have a much higher level of social development. And what has happened in the past is that I think a lot of the developing countries also realize that. What I do know is that China has come up with some social standards. It's been presented to the OECD. We hopefully expect that to come through. But even if you look at it from a European perspective, ESRS 1 and 2, 1 is basically 2 is climate, 2 is nature. So the social stuff is way down the line from a priority perspective. And even they have postponed that by another 2 years. So a lot of these things we will have to drive this from a developing country perspective to ensure the stuff that's urgent for developing countries get more put onto the forefront. But it's also part of our participation. It's no use for us complaining because sometimes our part of participation in these global forums from an African perspective is sometimes also very low.
Yeah, and maybe I can add to that just the our experience watching this from a development finance institution perspective for the past 20 years is 20 years ago, it was GRI reporting, it was voluntary, and there was very little interest from the investors. Interestingly, investors were involved in the establishment of GRI as a response to the Exxon Valdez oil spill, but then GRI went on a journey where it was more focused on civil society expectations. But now we've come full circle and investors are a big driver both of the ESG reporting for risk management, as well as the impact reporting for that additional value. But those two communities work separately. They're in different silos. So what you're seeing is, even though the JSE does have social indicators in the JSE guidance, it's not necessarily answering the question, the impact questions that you want to quantify. Those frameworks sit with the Global Impact Investing Network and with the IRIS catalog, but there's no clear bridge made between what are the stories we're trying to tell. And then for a DFI like IFC, we're doing it simply to do investments. We don't have an option. We have double materiality embedded in how we operate. So an investment does not get approved unless we know what the environmental, social, and governance risks are to the business and to society. So that's non-negotiable for us. And then we need to convince our board that we're doing extra positive impact. So we need the job creation indicators. We need the social impact and benefits. And I think, and to your point, the reason why it's not consolidating is the reporting debate has evolved because different groups come in to start to drive it and influence it. And so South Africa did consolidate under the Integrated Reporting Council, right? We had a consolidation of a model that then influenced the global debate dialogue. So we've had a big influence already. But because things have shifted again, now we have to reorganize. The other thing I wanted to touch on and then go back to the panelists is climate change has really dominated the disclosure discussion. So everyone's thinking about climate change. It's often where the biggest costs are, scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions reporting down the value chain. But this forms part of sustainability reporting, which has different types of costs. Some indicators are low cost, some indicators are high cost. So Lushni, I wanted to come back to you just in terms of the work that you guys have been doing to understand what are the knock-on effects, how will cost impact how disclosure can get rolled out given these dynamics?
Standard fees is your piece on
Thank you. So the study Louise is referencing, we ran a study that was funded by the IFC. We had Genesis Analytics produce a cost-benefit analysis of implementing these sustainability frameworks using the JSE guidance as a potential proxy. And they came out with, and they managed to quantify the costs, not necessarily the benefits, but we do have a string of benefits, which I think most people are aware of, but it's a good reminder. But from a cost perspective, depending on where you are as a reporter on a spectrum of you starting off as a reporter or you are an advanced reporter, that means, you know, you've been doing sustainability reporting for years. You have the systems, the processes, the people, it's bedded down in the organization. Your costs can run from even an advanced reporter up onto 800,000. But for a company starting out, this can easily go up to 10 million. And the cost that we're talking about is, you know, whether you hire a consultant, employ a staff or, you know, to actually do the reporting, to systems and processes that you have to start implementing to manage your data, it is quite a burden if you're starting off. And we also have to realize when we look at, for example, and I'm using the listed companies, if you start segmenting, I mean, those advanced reporters are usually like your top 20, top 40 multinationals, big companies who probably have 2 to 3 people who are just looking at reporting alone, not everybody. But as you move down, your company staff complement is maybe 8 to 10 people. And now you have to include sustainability reporting on top of that, which may not necessarily be one framework. Like if I speak to friends who are in this space, they disappear for 3 months because sometimes they're doing 8 to 10 different sustainability type reporting. The other cost that they did look at, but does need further quantification work on, is assurance costs. Because part of this consistent comparable information is making sure that it is credible. Because again, you decision useful information, it has to be credible. And again, this can range from, I think it was 300,000 to a couple of million, depending on the type of assurance, the scope of that engagement that you are looking at. And this is external assurance. So it is quite a considerable expense. And I guess there's quite a few factors as well. I think one of the challenges we've picked up is capacity. And skills. There is a shortage of skills in the country of people who have been doing sustainability ESG type reporting over the years. It's pretty much a price war at this point. Reality. And it's not just the reporting, it's all the underlying activities that feed into for you to be able to report. And it's understanding those nuances and embedding those systems and processes and bringing everybody else along with you internally from, and I guess it's made easier if you have EXCO support in your board and as well. But if not, that is also an ongoing challenge for you.
Thank you. So we're coming in for the last round of comments from the panelists. So Ben, I'm going to ask you in what you were going to share now, but also to add maybe a little bit on the opportunity side. So we're starting to see sustainability reporting open up new opportunities for companies to access finance through different instruments. And you have been involved through KPMG in helping companies to position themselves for that finance, as well as understanding how ESG due diligence by investors can be addressed through better disclosure. Can you talk about how we shift this to how does disclosure start to unlock sustainable finance opportunities?
Yes. Just to the point that you make, we've done a market study globally where we're basically looking at private equity, venture capital, and also mergers and acquisitions activities. We have seen that globally, even in Africa, there's an increased demand from investors for ESG-related information, particularly if those particular investments are aligned with their ESG KPIs or their ESG investment themes. In the past, the previous years, we've seen that it's been low, but over the last year, there's been a significant increase. And I think it's not, a lot of it has been driven by companies' policies that has become more ESG orientated. We have seen the regulatory developments happening across different jurisdictions that has made this basically a requirement, voluntary, and sometimes it's also been mandatory. And a lot of this has also been driven from an institutional perspective. We've seen a lot of these large institutional investors like Vanguard, BlackRock, also making that part of their investment theme. Locally within South Africa, we've also seen that that has been embedded from a South Africa perspective, from a Regulation 28 perspective. And we've also seen a lot of pension funds are looking at asset managers, how they align, how their investments are aligned with the ESG priorities of what the pension funds have set themselves. But we do see a lot of, I think the ultimate objective is that people really want to make an impact. They're looking at the financial return, but they want to ensure that it's not only about the financial, but what is the impact that you're having on society from a social perspective, from an environmental perspective, and from a nature perspective. Different investors focus on different themes. Does not mean there's one size fits all. One investor may focus on the social aspects, while others may focus on the climate, will be very climate focused, and probably will just focus on your scope 1, 2, and 3, what you're doing. On the nature aspect, they will focus from biodiversity. What we're seeing is the uptake for that is significantly increasing. It's still dominated from a climate perspective, but we have seen that there's a significant issuance from a social type of loans, social type of bonds, to the aspects that we spoke about, that is definitely increasing. Given the geopolitical aspects that Vukela is mentioning, because yesterday we all said the potential new president say about drill, baby, drill, we had a call like that. There may be fundamental changes in terms of, because all of these have to be aligned, because with people's, how it impacts them economically, because that's what's driven a lot of this stuff in terms of the outlook going forward. But we do it over the long term, from our perspective. I mean, this is, we're going to have bumps in the road. That is the reality of what's going to happen. But we know that we have to change. We have to fundamentally change in the way that we do business, because we also have market failure. That's why we have this additional disclosure, because some of these impacts are not factored into financial pricing in the market economy. And that's why we have done the development that we've done currently and the climate crises that we currently have. So, and investors are becoming aware. We're also seeing it from a generational perspective, even on the venture capital, from the younger families, family offices. They'll find that the younger people are far more attuned to this than the older generation. But definitely, it's an uptick. The opportunities are there. And disclosure frameworks is a key, because people are looking at what are you disclosing? And a lot of the stuff, even without you knowing about it, there's so many AI programs that's collecting this information. You don't even know. They already formed the view about you. You don't even have to publish it. All of these, even the information that you have, I think one of the aspects, the European Union has instituted a new program where all of the information that you publish are going to be in a public database. They're going to get this information, and investors will form a view willingly or unwilling. If your information is not there, it will be unsolicited rating, and it will have an impact in terms of how you're being viewed. So there's an incentive for us to do this. And I think, any organization exists to make an impact on society, to demonstrate that, and to demonstrate that we do it in a sustainable way, not only for us, but for the future generations. But again, themes may change over time. You know, politicians only think about 4 years, but nature don't care about that. We have to think about the long term and disclosure and bringing the cost down. But I believe that to the point that you're making is that cost for that will definitely come down. I think technology, automation, in terms of standardization to reduce costs. That's simple as that. Once you standardize things, it becomes a lot more easier, and it becomes a lot more, and a lot of this can be automated going forward. but thanks.
Great, thank you. I think it's a very good point around the automation of the analysis. And I can say absolutely banks and investors are looking at reports. They're fishing in reports. They're looking for the ESG, risk management component, and then they're looking for opportunities. And the first sustainability-linked loan in South Africa was BNP Paribas, and their former CEO told the story that they looked at the integrated reports of South African companies to find the ones that had a convincing value proposition. And then they approached Motus Corporation based on specific KPIs that Motus had chosen for themselves in their own report, and they did that particular loan based on those indicators. So this is happening, and in the EU, there's now a huge demand for companies, so investing in shares in companies that have strong alignment with their sustainable finance taxonomy, which is now the standard for showing that the company is aligned with ESG and with sustainability indicators. So what I'd like to do is finish off with Vukile, give him the last word. We're out of time, so I can't take another question. But Vukile, you're the man behind rolling out the green finance taxonomy. You're also behind us getting the carbon tax reporting implementation happening. Where's your wish list in terms of the kinds of reports, specific kinds of reporting that you think we need to jump forward on as a country to get this moving?
Yeah, no, thanks, Louise. I mean, we are obviously really focused on the aspects, not only the sort of risk management aspects, but the reporting aspects that will drive additional investments. And that's the taxonomy, and like you mentioned, getting a credible carbon markets up and running. So over the next sort of year, there are three real the three principal focuses that we hope to really move the dial on. The first is, like I say, publishing specific recommendations, including what disclosures are required to develop a credible and deep carbon markets linked to the carbon tax. We hope to publish something later this year. The second is embedding mandatory reporting on taxonomical alignment within regulatory requirements. So that includes everything from pension funds to bank balance sheets. And then lastly is to publish recommendations on credible transition planning that forms part of an effective disclosure framework. And we hope to publish a sort of consultation document on that in the next sort of 6 months.
Thank you. We're out of time. Thank you to the panelists. Difficult topic, but you've put it brave effort. And thanks for the questions from the audience.